Today's show is brought to you by WarbyParker.com. Get a free 5-day home try-on at www.warbyparkertrial.com/polaropposites. 5 pairs, 5 days, 100% free. Warby Parker makes it easy. You choose 5 frames you'd like to try on, mail the frames back, choose your favorite pairs to have your prescription added, and order. Warby Parker makes your experience completely risk-free and free shipping all the way around. So again, visit warbyparkertrial.com/polaropposites to begin your free home try-on experience today. So all of that is linked in the description, and with that being said, let's get to the show.
If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
Here we are for another episode. Did y'all miss my voice? It's been a week. I apologize for not being able to release an episode last Wednesday. Shit happens, man. A lot of stuff happens sometimes. You get tired. This is a one-man show. I think a lot of people forget that I run all of this by myself. It was funny. I was talking to one of my friends, and he was like, yeah, I would love to like interview your team and see the behind the scenes of how you do everything. And I was like, What team are you talking about? This is a one-man show. So I thought it was like flattering that he thought that there's a whole ass team like running the behind the scenes of the podcast. Nope. It's just me. But I think that it's sometimes it's important to take a mental break. You know, I would go crazy. You know, it's hard releasing content from week to week, and sometimes I don't give myself a break. So last week I decided to take a break, come back refreshed, come back stronger for this week. So here we are for another episode. So I appreciate you guys for being patient with me. It truly means a lot that y'all listen every week. I love doing this, and if I didn't love doing it, I wouldn't, you know, do it. I could have said that a lot better, but if I didn't love doing the show, I wouldn't, you know, do it from week to week. But I love it, and I love that you guys love it. So before we start, actually, I recorded a bonus episode with my friend Brianna, and we have a special message from her mom, so we'll play that.
Actually, you know, Justin, that's so funny that you mentioned me. My mom is actually right here. She's actually joined here too. Hey, did you want to say something?
Hey, Justin, what's going on, son? You know, I am your number one fan. Even though I know Brianna thinks she is, but I want to say I absolutely love your show. I look forward to coming out every single Wednesday. I'm always tuning in. If you guys don't know it, but I am a DPD police officer, Dallas Police Department, and I even have my fellow officers listening to the show. We have a good time laughing at your guy, as you say, your generation. I love it. Keep it going. Keep up the great work. And just know that I am one of your number one fans, okay?
I love it. Thank you so much, Miss Tamika, for your kind words. It means a lot to me. Thank you for everybody that supports the show and loves the show. I need to find a way for you guys to send in like voice messages or something so you guys can connect to the show. And if you guys don't want to do that, still feel free to follow me on Instagram too. I appreciate it. I love that you guys love the show. And it's so cool that she sent it to all her DPD officers as well. I'm sure they have an interesting time listening to the show. So I've said a lot so far. At this point, let's just get to the show. This week, I am joined with my friend, Teresa. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Justin.
How are you?
I wasn't nervous until you started talking.
It's okay. The nerves will go away. Trust me. But Teresa is my friend, and she's joining me on this episode because our main topic deals with something that she is very close to. So I thought it would be important to grab her perspective for this episode. But before we start, Teresa, I think it'd be important for you to tell the listeners about your background so they can get an idea of what makes us different. Well, first of all, you're a woman, if y'all can't tell. And then what are the other things that make you different from me? Because I think you're also like a lot more liberal than I am.
Probably. I'd say I definitely lean left, but dating mm-hmm. my boyfriend has like kind of pushed me more towards the middle because, I mean, he's white and he has a different perspective from me.
Right.
So I'm Asian. I'm Vietnamese specifically. But yeah, I know Justin, very friendly, very funny, just a natural entertainer. And when he told me he was going to make a podcast, I honestly thought it was kind of a joke because it was just like random.
It was a running joke at one point. People were like, when is it starting? Like, is it ever happening?
Yeah, you were like asking for our opinions for like at least a semester. And I'm just like, is this going to be a thing? But it did. It happened. And I think you do a great job. So I'm very excited to be here.
Thank you. But I'm happy to get your perspective on this episode because we come from two different backgrounds. We're both minorities, but the African experience is different from the Nigerian experience, let me say, is different from the Vietnamese experience. You're also a woman. And, you know, all of that stuff that you've dealt with informs all of your opinions. So I'm excited to see what we'll get on this episode. But I think we're ready to get into Off My Chest.
Justin's gotta get off his chest. You know he's gotta get off his chest. Justin's gotta get some fucking shit off his chest.
So Off My Chest is a segment where we get to rant about things that are bothering us. If you guys would like something that you would like read about something you would like to get off your chest, feel free to email the podcast. All of that is linked in the description. And yeah, let's get into it. So this week, you know, a WWE wrestler, Shad Gaspard.
Oh, that is he was found.
You heard about this, right?
Dude, I watched WWE religiously back in like middle school.
Really?
I know. No one expects it. Honestly, the team that he was in, it was pretty racist. It was called Crime Time.
Yo, 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 yo. Shad Gaspard and JTG. It's Crime Time.
Brooklyn, Brooklyn.
Yes, see, WWE's low-key, I wouldn't say they're racist, but they do questionable things. So Shad Gaspard, during his WWE days, he was part of a stable, as Teresa said, called Crime Time, where there were these thugs, they would steal things, they would steal victories, and basically they had do-rags on and like baggy shorts and, you know, bulletproof vest on. It was very strange, but in hindsight, we're like, this was kind of problematic.
Yes, like completely. His tag team partner was JTG, and he just played on a bunch of racial stereotypes.
It's so problematic. But Shad Gaspard, sad news occurred. We found out that on Wednesday, he had actually gone missing because he was at the beach with his son, and his body finally washed up on shore 3 days later. And it turns out that a tidal wave or a tide had pulled him in, and that's how he drowned. And people were searching for his body, and then it finally showed up on the shore 3 days later. And it's just sad because he had a son, and I think he had a wife, and it's just sad. But the reason why I'm bringing this up is because we as humans, we tend to venture off into places that we have no place being in. We are land creatures. Why are we going out? Why are we going out into the deep sea and in the water when that's not our natural habitat? Why are we going skydiving when we're not birds? Our whole being is not to fly and be in the air. We are putting ourselves in precarious and dangerous situations when we shouldn't be in the first place.
Honestly, the ocean is so scary. I drowned almost two times in my life. I honestly shouldn't be alive right now because I almost died in Hawaii.
Same. How did you almost die?
Oh my gosh, it was so dumb. So we were like snorkeling and I was following this fish, and then I think the snorkel was like broken, and then I started filling up with water. Mm-hmm. So I like ripped it off. Great. But then where I was in the ocean, it just randomly dipped in like depth. Oh, and I'm only 5'2", yeah. So then I'm like, at first, I'm like, oh, wait, this is what it feels like to tread water. Okay, this isn't bad. And then I start panicking, mm-hmm. and I'm like, drowning. I look at this man next to me, and I'm like, save me, please.
Right.
And his kids are even like, Dad, like, shouldn't you go? So he like literally walks to me in the water. And then he starts drowning, mm-hmm. too. So he's pulling me down. And then my brother saves me.
Oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness you're here, because we wouldn't be having this moment right here. We'd love to see it.
I totally get the water fear.
Yeah, the water is also one of my biggest fears. The deep sea is something that's very frightening to me. I don't want to like sound like I'm just discounting his death. The point of me bringing up this story is just to talk about how we put ourselves in positions that we shouldn't even be in the first place. We're not water animals, so why are we going out into the water? I don't know if you disagree with this. I don't know if you agree. What is your take on this?
Well, what about like Polynesians? You know?
What do you mean?
They're like, their culture is bred like in the water. They're water warriors.
But culture... But culture is different from like natural habitat. Like we are inclined to stay on land. Like we don't have gills. Like obviously we're not, you know, built to live in water. So why do we go out? Okay, the thing is we say that we're supposed to learn how to swim. And I think that's wrong. I think people should learn how to keep themselves alive when they're in the water. But swimming, I don't think it's something that we should do because it's not a natural thing for us. We're forcing our bodies to adapt and to learn something that is not ingrained in the natural human existence. Like launching ourselves from a plane and plummeting down to the earth. That is crazy to me. Why do we do stuff like that?
I feel like skydiving is completely different from swimming, though.
How? They're both recreational.
No, because swimming, like, there are people who do spearfishing. And, like, they need that fish to survive, you know?
Yeah. Why do you need to skydive then?
No, I think you don't have to skydive. I think it's really dumb.
And rock climbing, too. Why are you going up into all this elevation, into all of this terrain for no reason? We are not, you know, mountain animals. We are, like, land animals. Like, why do people do that?
I mean, there are people who live in the mountains, though. Like in
oh my god.
I'm a sociology minor, so I'm trying to look at this in like every avenue I can.
She's like giving a caveat to every little thing that I say. Every little thing that I say. She's like, but you know, there are mountain people, but there are spearfishers. I mean, you have a point, but my thing is that we should, I don't know. I don't even know what my point is. My point is that we should not be putting ourselves in positions where stuff like this could happen. Everybody likes to have fun, but we're not meant to be in the water. So when stuff like this happens, it's sad. But then I always think that, you know, that's not our natural habitat. So natural selection and Mother Nature, you know, they are more powerful than us. So RIP to his family and everybody. And what do you guys think? Do you think that humans are supposed to be in water, that we're supposed to like exist in places that is not our natural habitat? What do y'all think? Let me know. So let's see. Let's move on to in the news. So much happened in the news, Teresa. Let's talk about Joe Biden.
What you had in Biden?
Sleepy Joe. Joe Biden. So Joe Biden was interviewed by Charlamagne of The Breakfast Club. And during the interview, towards the end, Joe Biden said some controversial things that had everybody talking. So this is what Joe Biden said.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions. But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
What did you think of that?
I thought it was very problematic, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kind of dipping back into what we just talked about. I don't think Joe Biden or anyone really can invalidate someone's blackness. And that kind of rhetoric just also perpetuates this idea that black people think, feel, and act one way, which is just wrong.
You're absolutely right. You're right. And I think it's so problematic because for the longest time, black people have consistently voted for the Democratic Party. And it's turned into this whole idea that black people are stupid and they're going to vote for the Democrats no matter what. So a lot of these politicians, they have all these platitudes where they say all these things that they're going to do for the community. As soon as they get elected into office, they do none of that. They completely turn their back on the community and start focusing on the things that matters to them. So every time it seems like we open ourselves up and we allow these people to come into our communities, whisper some good things in our ear, promise this and promise that. But at the end of the day, nothing is ever done. And this is just not a good thing because are we supposed to turn over to the Republican Party? And I say no. But at the same time, what are you supposed to do? Because the Republican Party obviously does not support you. And the Democratic Party says that they support you, but they don't do anything to help out your community. The black vote is not guaranteed. And the fact that I'm actually glad that he said that, Teresa.
Because it like illuminates everything?
Yeah. Because for once, these politicians are finally being honest with the people. Yeah, tell us that you see us as a vote. They're basically saying that if you're black, you have to vote for the Democratic Party when that's not true. You can vote for other parties. You can vote third party. But the black vote does not belong to the Democratic Party. And people have to wake up. Like, you need to earn our votes. Our votes aren't granted. Our votes aren't confirmed just because we're black. Like, you have to actually prove to us why you are a good candidate. What are you going to do for us? basically. And I don't know what we should do, like, when it comes to 2020 to ensure that, you know, they do the things that they, you know, promised us that they would do. Every year when it comes to election season, it's the same thing year after year. It's pandering too, because I remember one time for when Hillary was running in 2016, she had an appearance on The Breakfast Club. Charlamagne asked her, you know, what do you carry in your purse, Hillary Clinton? And she goes, oh, hot sauce.
What's something that you always carry with you?
Hot sauce.
Really?
You, yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Are you getting information right now?
Hot sauce.
Hot sauce in my bag, Swag?
Hot sauce.
Really?
Yes.
Now, listen,
yes.
I just want you to know, people are going to see this and say, okay, she's pandering to black people.
Okay. Is it working?
Yeah. And I'm like,
I eat jalapeno slices as chips.
Yeah, her little advisor told her, you know, Beyonce's lemonade is really popular like that. Maybe sometime during the interview you can sprinkle in, oh, that you have hot sauce in your bag or that you love Beyonce.
I got hot sauce in my bag, swag.
Like, we are not buying this. And then Charlamagne even said in the clip, you know, a lot of people, they're going to say that you're pandering to the black community. And then Hillary goes, oh, well, is it working? I'm like, she is so sad trying to hustle for votes. And it looks like she didn't earn it because she didn't end up winning. But it's just sad what they'll stoop to in order to get a vote from black people. Because who do Asians typically vote for?
Yo, that's hard because there's like the rich Asians and then the poor Asians. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the rich ones tend to vote Democratic, to be honest.
Really? No, oh, the rich ones?
Like, the more educated, they're probably richer.
Uh-huh.
But, like, I know from my own experience, my family mm-hmm. tends to vote Republican.
Really?
Yes. And you can imagine, like, what kind of, like, tension that would be whenever, like, they're talking about politics, and I enjoy.
Yeah, because you're fairly liberal. So do you not say anything? Do you fight back? Do you tell them who to vote for? Do they listen to you? How is that dynamic?
I always speak up, but I don't, like, I try not to, like, raise my voice or anything. But, like, if I think what they're saying is unfair or unjustified, I'll, like, let them know.
Interesting. Very interesting, Teresa. But my thing is that politicians, if you're going to say something, be about it. Help the communities that you're, you know, pandering to for votes. Like, stop saying what you're going to promise and actually deliver on your promises. Because part of the reason why Hillary Clinton lost is because she makes all these promises. And it's not partly her. It's the system that she's in. They make promises to all these communities and they ignore them. A lot of people felt ignored. All these people working in factories saying that you're going to help them out. They feel ignored and then they turn around and vote for the other person because you're not listening to them. You're saying that you're for them, but you're not showing it. Don't just tell me, show me. And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, honestly, that's partly why I really liked Bernie, because he was actually protesting in, like, the civil rights movement.
Ooh, liberal.
Dude, but, like, you know, if you talk the talk, if you walk the talk or whatever.
If you talk the talk, you gotta walk the walk, yes. Right?
I think he actually did that. And whether or not you, like, disagree with his policies, you can, like, at least respect that he did something with those beliefs.
Right. That's fair. That's fair. Everybody's entitled to their person. So, whew, interesting. So that's what I have to say about that. So the next story we have is Lori Loughlin. So if you guys don't know Lori Loughlin, she is Aunt Becky from Full House. Y'all heard last year that her and her husband got into some trouble because they paid $500,000 in bribes so their daughters could be crew members for USC. So their daughters wanted to get into USC, so they basically forged documents, photoshopped some things, and paid people $500,000 so their daughters can be assured admission into USC.
This morning, actress Lori Loughlin is fessing up.
Any comments at all?
The former Full House star is set to appear before a judge today and admit her guilt in the college admission scandal, despite spending more than a year fighting the charges. She and her husband, fashion designer Massimo Giannulli, are accused of paying $500,000 in bribes to the scheme's mastermind, Rick Singer, to get their daughters admitted to the University of Southern California by having them pose as recruits for the crew team, even though neither had ever rowed.
I don't really care about school, as you guys all know.
For months, they insisted the payments were legitimate donations and even accused prosecutors of misconduct.
They've been fighting this case tooth and nail.
It worked, and they were given admissions, but as soon as people found out about it, they kicked her daughters out of school. Her and her husband ordered to court. They initially pled not guilty, but now they are pleading guilty. And it's interesting because they thought their privilege was going to allow them to get away. They thought they could fight this out in court and get away with it, but no. So now they pled guilty, and they're about to face sentencing. So we'll see how much time they get. But Felicity Huffman, who was the other celebrity parent that was involved in all of that, she pled guilty right away. She served her 11-day sentence and she's released now. So she's a convicted felon now, but she was honest from the get-go and she wasn't trying to play these games with the legal systems and use her privilege to her advantage. She owned up to what she did and I appreciate that. And I feel like Lori Loughlin, it's annoying because you and I worked hard to get into good schools. You and I are both minorities. We did it the hard way, and for people to cheat their way in, it's just annoying because wouldn't you feel imposter syndrome if you knew your parents cheated to get you into a prestigious school? I would feel like I don't belong.
I don't know if they felt like imposters. I felt like, honestly, I feel like they thought that they deserved to be there, even if they didn't have the grades.
Is that not wrong to you?
Oh, no, it's totally wrong. I think
like you feel like you're owed admission.
Yeah, I think they're incredibly entitled. They're incredibly privileged and they're not sorry.
They're not sorry. And I think the kids didn't know about it, but the parents told them to act like it was all the parents so that they don't get implicated in it all.
Oh, yeah, like, of course they knew about it. There's no way they didn't know.
There are people that work hard that are doing it the right way, and they deserve to be celebrated. And just know that when you do dirty, it always comes to light, no matter what. When it comes to tax evasion, the government will find you. When it comes to money laundering, the government will find you. When it comes to cheating to get your kids into a prestigious school, guess what? The government will find you. So it is what it is, and this is what happens. Teresa, our last story before we get into our main topic. Doja Cat, y'all. So y'all's favorite artist, Doja Cat, she's been rising in the ranks. You know, she's been bubbling under for a while. She finally released the song Say So. It caught on with TikTok. Kids loved it. Kids made a dance to it. Y'all got it to number one. Y'all campaigned for it. And now things are surfacing about her that apparently she's problematic. So I guess this is all stemming from leaked footage of her on this website called Tiny Chat, where she's like video chatting with all these white incel people, and she's saying the n-word and she's degrading herself in front of like all these white men, and it was very strange to see. I know that you watched like basically a video breaking down everything. What was your take on everything, and where do you think the frustration is coming from?
Oh, I just I have so many thoughts on that.
Tell me.
Because internet strangers assume that I worship the white dick just because my boyfriend is white.
And more on that in a second.
And here's Doja literally spending time with white supremacist incels, stripping for them, being flirtatious with them, and admitting that she does this because she loves, and I quote, the white man's dick. Mm. And I'm just like, girl, what are you doing? Like, are you that thirsty for attention? And like later to mock victims of police brutality. And right. Then she even uses the homophobic F word, and she like defends her right to say it. So she's just super problematic.
Well, Doja Cat is one of those people that, you know, there's people that you meet in life and they've never done anything wrong to you, but for some reason you don't like them. You can't quite put your finger on it. Something about them rubs you the wrong way and you just don't know what it is. That's always been my relationship with Doja Cat. Don't really care for her music. When I would see her, like how she interacts and stuff, I'm like, something about her is off. Like something about her just is not sitting well with my spirit. And looks like this surfaced and now I'm like, that's what it is. There we go. I knew it. I knew something would come out about her. And here the day has come. And I don't feel bad for her because whenever she said that slur about gay people, her apology was trash. And people got over that. They canceled her for a second. And now she's back on top. But now that, you know, she's had this number one single, people unearthed this video. And this goes, I just say this to say, whenever you're on top, people love to build you up, but they also love to take you down as well. This happens to everybody. Cardi B, Lizzo. When you're at the pinnacle of your career, people want to bring you down. And I'm not saying that they're wrong for doing so. Obviously, if there's something problematic about your past that you've never addressed, you should answer for it. And the thing with Doja Cat is that she waited days to release an apology, and she releases an apology on Instagram. She disables the comments so she can't read all the things that people have to say about her. And it's just a text thing that who knows if her publicist wrote it. She's basically, I can even read the thing. Let me find what she said. So this is what Doja Cat had to say. She said, "I want to address what's been happening on Twitter. I've used public chat rooms to socialize since I was a child. I shouldn't have been on some of these chat room sites, but I personally have never been involved in any racist conversations. I'm sorry to everyone that I offended. I'm a black woman." Interesting. Oh. "Half of my family is black from South Africa, and I'm very proud of where I come from. As for the old song that's resurfaced, it was in no way tied to anything outside of my own personal experience. It was written in response to people who often use that term to hurt me. I made an attempt to flip its meaning, but recognized that it was a bad decision to use the term in my music. I understand my influence and impact, and I'm taking all of this very seriously. I love you all, and I'm sorry for upsetting or hurting any of you. That's not my character, and I'm determined to show that to everybody moving forward. Thank you."
Honestly, so that's what she said. Seems kind of fake.
Take your paper apology and throw it in the trash. I think that she's only apologizing because she got caught.
Exactly.
This stuff has been out for a while. Why not get ahead of it and tackle it like a mature person? And why not, you know, allow people to comment? Why disable comments? Why not post the apology to another platform and have people react to it in an authentic way? I think that it's a cop-out, and I hate when people, you know, get accused of doing something, and they go to their notes app, have their publicist type up a little response, and then they just put it on their social media. That's not good enough for me, especially when it comes to race. You have a lot of black fans, and I feel like they deserve an answer. I think the mature thing for you to do is face the camera, have an authentic face-to-face to your fans, you know, apologizing, feeling sorry for the people that you offended and your fans that supported you to get you to number one. How do you think they feel? So a lot of people are saying that she's canceled, that they're no longer listening to her music anymore. What do you think? Like, did you like her? Like, will you be listening? Like, what is your relationship with all of this stuff?
I mean, honestly, I just liked Say So. I didn't listen to any of her other songs.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, she's totally canceled in my book. And this is coming from someone who hates, like, cancel culture.
Right. Well, there's really no such thing as cancel culture, especially when you've crossed over to a larger, like, white audiences. I mean, audience, because a lot of times when, you know, black artists cross over, like, they're not affected by cancellations anymore. They say controversial things. People forget about it 2 weeks later, and life goes on as normal. So it's annoying that people have all of this to say on Twitter. They get, you know, upset, and then you forget about it. Like, you go back to streaming their music, you have amnesia. But my thing with cancellations is that if you're canceled, you shouldn't be listening to their music, you shouldn't be going to their concerts, you shouldn't be streaming them, anything. Like, it stops there.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know, I don't know if she's going to be canceled, because I feel like at this point she's crossed over to a larger, like, wider audience, because she's playing on pop radio. Like, she's officially crossed over. So I think that this will be a blow up. A week later, people will forget about it, and they'll go back to forgetting that it never even happened.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Doja.
And my last thing is that we always support bad behavior, it seems. Bad Baby, 6ix9ine, all of these people have been canceled many times, but yet they're thriving. So does anybody truly get canceled these days?
I don't know. I feel like even if the large majority cancels you, there's always that, like, tiny minority group that just stands you for the rest of their life.
I guess 6ix9ine kind of has, like, a cult following, because I'm not sure who's a fan of 6ix9ine.
Yeah, he's like a horrendous human being, but he's great for memes.
Yeah, interesting character, but I don't support him, I don't support Bad Baby, and I certainly don't support Doja Cat. We hate to see it.
Doja!
Okay, Teresa, it is time to get into our main topic. So, you know, interracial relationships is a topic that we discuss many times on the podcast, But rarely, and I never actually have had somebody that has experienced being in an interracial relationship on the show.
Wait, so what? Teresa,
yeah, that's true. So we discuss these things, but I've never had, because I'm like, who do I know that's in an interracial relationship? And I never know. But the time has come, and I think that we now have the space to, you know, openly discuss interracial relationship, because you, Teresa, you're actually in an interracial relationship.
Yes. And to preface, I just want to say that this is not an expose. I'm just trying to speak of my experiences and my story. And so instead of using my boyfriend's real name to protect his identity and also his family's identity, because we're going to go into that, I'm right. going to refer to him as Lucas.
Okay. So Lucas is Teresa's bae, and you mentioned that he is white. Did you ever see yourself like being with a white person or somebody outside of your race when you were imagining who you would end up with in life? Like, what was your relationship with culture and, you know, the people that you gravitate towards, I guess?
Oh, okay. Honestly, there was a time in my life, I was probably in late elementary or middle school or so, and there was just a lot of, like, self-hatred when it came to my race, to be honest.
Okay, really?
Yeah, and I was, like, ashamed to be Asian. And I remember in, like, kindergarten, I looked at my friends in my class, and I'm like, wow, when they get in trouble, like, all their parents do is just, like, ground them, whereas, like, I get spanked. Like, it must be nice being white. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't really accept me fully either. I think I definitely saw myself, like, dating a white man if that came to happen. You know, like, mm-hmm. I wasn't, like, opposed to it.
Like, it wasn't out of the realm of possibility, right?
Yeah. And when I got to college, that's when, I don't know, I became exposed to, like, I don't want to say cool Asian, but, like...
You're Asian, so you can say whatever you want about Asians. Okay, I don't have that
the
right.
Asians that I grew up in, they played a lot of League, or, you know, they just did a bunch of nerdy stuff. And when I got to UT, there were, like, these Asians that were, like, dancing and playing sports, and they were just so cool. So then I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. like, I can date anyone. And mm-hmm. when I met Lucas, I didn't really want a boyfriend, but I just fell for him, and then we just started dating.
How's that experience been? Because obviously with interracial relationships, there's all the challenges that come with it. It's a learning experience, because when you're in an interracial relationship, you're learning about the other person. That other person has a completely different culture from you.
You know, it's been tough at times, to be honest.
Really?
And so, like, as I said earlier, like, online strangers think I worship white men. And then my boyfriend has actually been accused of having yellow fever by other people, mm-hmm. like, to his face.
Well, explain that, because some people listening might not know what that is. They'll think it's, like, corona or something.
Well, yellow fever is a disease, but in this context, it's just, like, people who like Asians just because they're Asian.
Like an Asian fetish?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So, you know, online strangers, they're not super cool, but a homeless man said that we looked like Barbie and Ken. Mm-hmm. So it just, and then the younger generation, they're generally very accepting. Although I think a lot of Asian guys look at us with, like, scorn, because they're viewing him as, like, stealing their woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's always important to ignore critics, because I think with interracial relationships, there's always going to be critics, because there's this whole idea that people should stay within their culture. And I think maybe that's something that your parents have echoed, a sentiment your parents have said.
Yeah.
Do they know that you're dating a white guy? What are their thoughts on it?
They were actually super cool with it. Like, he was the first guy I ever brought home. And, you know, not to say, like, the road has been completely perfect, but mm-hmm. for the most part, they've been very welcoming and accepting. Like, he stayed over at my house multiple times.
And what about on the other side? Like, are his parents okay with it? Do they care?
You know, I didn't expect this, and neither did my friends, because we always assumed that it would be the minority parents that has the trouble.
Right.
But it's been a lot harder on his side for, like, acceptance of our relationship.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? Is it because you're Asian? Is it because of you? They don't like you specifically, but they don't have a problem with Asians. Like, what is their apprehension? Where is their apprehension coming from?
Okay, so my boyfriend truly, honestly believes that they are not racist. And before I say they're racist, I would call them other words, like controlling or paranoid. And I don't want to label them as racist, but it's just like some of the comments I've heard through him. I'm like, you know, that seems kind of pointed. But I think
does he read it as racist or questionable or prejudiced, or does he brush it off? Like, what is his reaction when he hears stuff like that? You hear it, you obviously have a reaction to it. What is his reaction when he hears the questionable stuff that you think they say?
So the questionable stuff, I think he doesn't view it as potentially racist until I bring it up.
Yeah. Is it too much to ask an example?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if you want, like, to talk over coffee or something.
Yeah, well, this is not pod talk, basically.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. That's interesting because, you know, you didn't think that it was going to be this hard dating somebody outside of your race. Yeah. Well, because your family seems to not care, but on the other side, it's hard. Do you think that if parents have apprehension about somebody that their son is marrying, that the relationship can work? Can the two coexist?
I definitely think so. Because, you know, it's true partly, like, when you marry someone, you marry their family. But just, like, realistically, there is a chance you won't spend that much time with your in-laws. You know, and
that's true.
If you really love someone, then I think, you know, you choose your partner. But, you know, if you choose your family over your partner, then maybe your partner just wasn't enough for you. But I definitely think you can coexist if things aren't completely rainbows and butterflies.
Yeah, I think my opinion has always been that it'll be hard because everybody wants their parents' approval. Everybody wants their friends' approval. Life is much easier when everybody gets along.
Yeah, and when but that's it's not like the case.
Yeah, sometimes it's not like that. Sometimes you love somebody, but you hate their in-law. You hate their, you know, that you hate their sister. You hate their brother, but you love this one person. So because you love somebody so much, you're able to coexist. You're able to get by. The thing is with family is that you're right. You don't see them all the time. You see them during holidays sometimes, maybe on, you know, certain birthdays, that's when you see them. But usually most of the year you're spending time together rather than with the family that, you know, don't get along.
Also, I just want to add, like, it's not enough just to love your partner if their parents are being, like, disrespectful and mean to you. What's enough is you love them, but also they're willing to stand up for you. So
is that happening?
Yes. I would be a lot more upset if my boyfriend wasn't standing up for me whenever his parents are being disrespectful. But because he is, that's not something I can, like, blame.
You know, sometimes couples, like, experience, like, prejudice from other people. Like, have you experienced any of that at all? I know people, like, said yellow fever, but is that the extent of which people have stuff to say about your relationship?
I mean, no one has, like, thrown a tomato at us.
Because that's the pinnacle of hatred, right?
But sometimes we'll get looks when we go into a restaurant. Actually, he came into my mom's salon once, and one of her customers was just staring at him, and I think she was just, like, wondering, like, how are we, like, coexisting? And I'm just like, chill, dude. It's not that big a deal.
Well, how do you feel about culture? Because you are Vietnamese, and let's say you and this person want to have children together. How would you navigate that? Because those are two different cultures, and some people have this idea of when you marry or when you're in a relationship with somebody outside of your race, you're losing your culture because you're marrying somebody that's, you know, not tied with the culture. And when you have kids, there's an identity lost there.
Yeah. So something I'm very afraid of is that our kids won't speak Vietnamese. And it's because I'm fluent, but I'm also just a lot better at English, and I don't want to, like, limit myself when I'm talking to my children, but I'm worried they just won't speak Vietnamese at all. Also, I think I should mention that while I am, like, Asian, I think in a lot of ways I'm more Americanized even than Lucas.
Really?
Than Lucas, yeah. Because, like, I think Asian culture is all about, you know, the community and the broader group over you, but I'm more big on individual happiness and seeking fulfillment. So I don't know, take that as you will.
I find it interesting that your parents like don't worry about the preservation of your Vietnamese culture at all. Like, that's interesting to me because I feel like with Nigerian parents, that's one thing that they worry about is the preservation of culture, wanting you to marry somebody that is Nigerian, somebody that shares the same, you know, roots and, you know, heritage. So their fear whenever they, you know, come and raise their children in America is that their kids will marry, you know, white people and that they'll completely, you know, lose themselves. But I think it's something that is kind of inevitable in a way because, you know, you love who you love. I'm not sure if you're of the belief that love is blind. Do you think so?
What do you mean love is blind?
Like love is blind. Like you can't help who you fall in love with. Like everybody ideally for our parents or my parents specifically would want you to marry somebody Nigerian. But love is something that you can't control. Love is something that you just, you know, you fall for somebody. And if they happen to be of a different race, that's how it is. Love is blind and you love who you love. Or is it more to it than that?
I mean, I kind of agree that love is blind, but I am a major subscriber in the idea of love is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So
I mean, you're choosing who you love is what you're saying, right?
Like you're choosing to stay even when things are not super rainbows and butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, so I didn't control like falling in love with Lucas, but I can mm-hmm. control staying in love. Or staying when I'm not feeling it, but I know I will.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because let me ask you this. What has been the hardest part of being in an interracial relationship? Because it is a challenge for a lot of people, especially in this day and age.
I mean, personally, it's just his family not accepting me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like no matter what I do, what I accomplish, how I feel, how I treat my boyfriend, it's never enough.
Do you think they're of the belief that they would rather him marry somebody that's white, or is it not about race at all?
You know, I've definitely had that thought, and my boyfriend has conflicting views on that. If you want a definite answer, I do think that they would be happier. Not that they dislike me just because of my race, but I think they would be happier if I was white.
And I guess that's a hard conversation to have because it seems like, I guess maybe he denies that, maybe? I don't know, because I've never met him, but like, I don't know if he denies like that. I don't know if you've ever brought that up to him. I don't know if this is something
that you've... Oh, I've definitely brought that up.
And then what happens when you bring this up that you think that they don't like you because of your race?
Well, he'll never straight up say they're racist.
Why do you think that is?
I think partly it's because, you know, they're his parents and he loves them. And it's hard to, like, view your parents as something other than what you viewed them when you were a child.
That's understandable. We all love our parents, and to see our parents as anything but loving people who love everybody and see the best for everybody, it's hard. And, you know, sometimes people don't want to accept the reality, you know, of it. Because I've said on the podcast many times that my parents have said questionable things. I'm not afraid to have those conversations because I think that if I openly, you know, have those discussions on a public platform like a podcast, more people will be willing to open up and say, hey, my parents say questionable things too. And I think that it'd be better for everybody if we were just honest with each other, because why go around lying? Everybody knows what's said during Thanksgiving when y'all have, you know, political arguments, when y'all have, you know, deep, you know, arguments. You know what your parents say, you know what your aunt say, you know what your uncle say. They say questionable things, and I think that if I voice that on the podcast, people will be like, okay, it's not just me. Everybody has those family members, and that's just reality. You know, we love the people that we're around, but they have questionable behaviors and actions, and those also need to be addressed and talked about so we can all, you know, come together and have this moment of honesty with each other.
Yeah, so I think he does a pretty good job at, like, acknowledging, you know, that comment, that was pretty pointed, or that comment was pretty messed up, but he's hesitant to just label them as a whole as racist.
Yeah, that's interesting. What about when it comes to politics? Do you and your boyfriend have the same beliefs when it comes to politics?
I am more liberal than him. Mm-hmm. You know, we both feel like Joe Biden's kind of a mess. We feel like Trump's a mess. I think just like when it comes to each individual issue, we might not completely agree, but I think he's pretty moderate but like slightly leans left, whereas I'm like pretty left.
Yeah, I would agree with that too, because I'm not, I think there's a spectrum when it comes to politics. There's far right, there's far left, there's in the middle. I want to say that I fall, and everybody wants to say that they fall in the middle, but it's not true. We all have our leanings. It's easy. The reason why people do that is because it's easy to not have an opinion on anything. It's easy to say, oh, I like both, rather than offending one side or the other. You want, you know, to appease both sides. But I would say that I lean to the left, but I'm not far left at all, because I'm not with all of that, and I'm definitely not to the right. I'm definitely not to the right. Like, y'all know that. Y'all been listening every week. Y'all can get a sense of my ideology, even though I don't flat out say, you know, who I support and who I don't. But y'all know. Y'all know. And I will be voting in November.
Good for you.
I know. I know. But Teresa, what did you want to say when it comes to interracial relationships? Like, what do you have, like, written down that you definitely wanted to address? Do you understand why his parents would feel some type of way? Do you think that people who want to preserve their culture are justified in thinking that way?
Like, they want to preserve their white culture?
Yeah, anything. Like, whether that's Nigerians and wanting you to marry a Nigerian person. Like, do you think that they are justified to think that, you know, it's a good thing to marry within your own race and culture?
I mean, I can understand why people, especially minorities, would want to stay within their race or ethnicity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When it comes to white people, then I'm like, well, I don't know.
But is that a double standard, though? Because do they not have a culture? Because what is your boyfriend's culture?
I don't want to say they don't have a culture, because for my boyfriend, at least, I think he does strongly identify with some of his, like, European roots, like the British or the Scottish or the Eastern European roots. But then I know there are white people who are like, yeah, my ancestor came on the Mayflower. I'm Irish, but that doesn't mean anything to me.
Honestly, I think at some point I'm going to have to devote an episode, a segment or something to addressing what is white culture, you know? Is it 4th of July hot dogs and fireworks? What is white culture, you know? Because white and race is just a construct. So if everybody else has a culture, what is their culture?
I can't answer that because I'm not white.
Right. I feel like I would need to have a white person to have on the show to answer those questions, because I don't know what their culture is. I couldn't tell you.
I know you're coming not from a place of judgment when you say, I don't know what white culture is.
Of course.
I know you're being genuine. It just comes off very funny.
I mean, it's true. It's true. I don't know. I guess the hardest thing has just been family. But other than family, you don't think there's anything else that's been hard to navigate with dating somebody that's completely different from you racially?
Oh, I think there's something very different in the way we recharge. I'm very extroverted and he's very introverted.
Mm-hmm. And y'all are truly, like, different, like opposites away. He's short, you're tall.
No, you're Asian, he's tall, he's white. I'm short.
Oh, it's my bad. You know what I meant.
Like, just for context, my boyfriend is 6'5 and I'm 5'2.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's like 15 inches.
That's a lot.
It is. But yeah, he's very introverted and, you know, sometimes he just wants his space alone, and then, you know, I'll feel like, you don't want to hang out with me. Like, to me, I love recharging by talking to people. So when he needs his space, it almost feels like a rejection when I know that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can't help how you feel because you're just wired differently.
Oh, that's true. That's definitely true. Did you have misconceptions when it came to what you thought he was going to be like and what his family was going to be like versus what they are and what the reality is, and vice versa?
Well, they were very nice to me when we first met. It just, like,
were slow. Or weren't?
No, they were very nice to me.
Oh, maybe because they thought that he wasn't serious. He's like, okay, it's one of his little...
Yes, that's what I think. I think when we first met, they're like, oh, whatever. But it's been 2 years and it's just gotten worse.
I didn't realize it's been 2 years.
Yes.
That's a long time.
It is. And the first few months we met, it was long distance. So we had to do long distance right away. Kind of amazing, right? We're still here. But, you know.
No, it is. It is. And I think that now that it's getting more serious, y'all are now done with college. Like, the next step is, like, establishing your career and then being more serious about your relationships. So I think maybe it scares his parents that you're sticking around, you're still here, and you're not just a college girl. Like, you're here to stay. And I think it scares them because they, I don't know if they thought that their son would always marry a white girl, and the fact that he's serious with somebody that's not white, it makes them mad because they want to have an all-white family.
Well, they told him specifically that they didn't think we were right for each other for, you know, one reason or another.
Well, what were the reasons, though? What did they have any valid points when it came to why they said that y'all aren't right for each other?
So the first thing they said was they didn't like my boundaries, which I've previously said that I've worked on since then. But they honestly don't give me like a chance to like talk to them. Like, it's been months since we last talked and they don't know that I've like changed and evolved. But they also said, like, you know, kind of, I think, pointed stuff about my family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, oh, that's just hard for me to ignore.
What about when it comes to, like marriage and stuff? Do you think that they dislike you to the point where they wouldn't even come to your wedding?
You know,
have you thought that far?
We've talked about marriage, like, on our first date. Okay, we were, like,
that on your first date?
We were that couple.
Okay, it must have been quite the day, because that is a big thing to be talking about on the first
date. Not that we were, like, we're going to marry each other, but it was, like,
I know,
how do you feel?
But I'm all about establishing, you know, connections and, you know, establishing, you know, seriousness and, you know, if it'll work. But talking about that on the first date, that's a lot.
Yeah, I think there are people who are highly monogamous and highly not. It's a spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely in the highly monogamous camp.
That's so interesting.
But yeah, I don't know if they wouldn't show up, but I know that they told him that if he wanted to marry me, that he wouldn't have their blessing.
Ooh.
Yeah, they actually told him that.
Well, that's a big thing, because that
it's
means
so
that they won't support the union if it were to happen. And how does that make you seem to be calm about it? I wouldn't be calm at all.
Well, it's probably because I've been dealing with this for like over a year.
How did he take that? Did he just say nothing? Did he say, "Well, she's probably going to be the one, so deal with it"? Or
so I had told him, I was like, "You're the one for me," like very quickly, right? Like 2 months mm-hmm. or so.
Right.
And then a few months after that, you know, obviously when I told him, he was like, "Whoa, kind of freaks me out, but whatever."
Mm-hmm.
He tells me when he's visiting my family for the first time, he says, "Today I thought about, you know, losing you or you getting hurt one day, and it made me really sad. And it made me realize that I wanted to be with you forever."
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, "Oh my gosh, like, this is amazing. We're on the same page. I found my person." And then months later, repeatedly, his parents just undermine and basically try to break us up. Except I didn't know this. Like, he didn't tell me any of it. It just always came down to this argument where It was like he was taking it back, and he was like, "I'm not sure of us anymore." And I was very confused because I didn't know the context of what was going on behind the scenes. So it just felt like,
right.
It felt like there was something wrong with me. And
right.
I'm like, "Why am I not worthy? Why are you rejecting me?"
Mm-hmm.
And I cried a lot, like
within
that year. Yeah, because we had that talk like at least 2-3 times. It just showed up in different ways, but it would be like, "I'm not sure of us,"
right?
You know, like, "Should I have been with other people?" Yada yada. Because I'm like, how could you go from saying you want to be with me forever to taking it back?
Do you think it's fair for somebody to say that you don't like your own race? Because I think you said that you're proud of your race, but like, let's say you never met your boyfriend. Do you have a problem like marrying somebody that's Asian, or do you see yourself marrying somebody that's Asian?
I mean, I see myself marrying Lucas. Like, I love him. But mm-hmm. if it's like general, like, do I see myself marrying a white guy or an Asian guy or a black guy? Like, I don't see myself doing anything. In Asia, I mean, people like light skin. And I know my mom, she was actually like excited by the idea of having like mixed grandchildren. But, you know, I can't say if she'd be as excited if my boyfriend was black.
See, but why is that? Okay, why was it that she's happy and she doesn't mind this your boyfriend, but if it was a black person, she would not be here for that?
I mean, you know the reason why.
Racist? Are you calling your mom racist?
Dude, yes.
At least you admit it. Some people be like, no, she just doesn't like their type.
No, I call her out on it all the time, okay?
Really? You flat out think that she's racist towards black people?
Yes, of course I do.
How? But is it just the things that she says and how she, like, stuff that remarks? Is she scared of them? Like, what?
Yes.
Where does it come from? And where? Like, how is she racist?
A lot of immigrants, like, when they come over to America and they turn on, like, the news. And, you know, the media is always, like, skewed. You know, they'll see, like, a big black man on TV committing some crime. And then it's just, like, in their mind, they think black equals bad, you know?
They're dangerous.
They're criminals. But also, I think minorities, they're not at the top. You know, they're not white, but at least they can be above someone else. And that's black people.
So black people are the denominator that everybody's like, well, at least I'm not black.
Yeah, and that's really sad, but that's the truth.
That is sad, but... And I'm glad you said that and you were open with that, because this is not discussed enough. A lot of Asians don't like black people. This is a topic that we'll have for a future episode, but a lot of Asian people are racist towards black people and people don't discuss it. People like to dance around it. People say, oh, that's not true. They love everybody. No, it's not. No, it's not. And we'll get into it in a future episode, but it's true that like Asian people do not like black people.
Yeah, I think all the minorities, as long as they're above someone else, it's kind of like in history when you can be a poor white person, but at least you're not black.
Yeah. That's just our country. I hate that I'm still talking about this, but we find ways to divide each other. If you're white, before it was like, if you're Irish, if you're German, oh, we don't like these people. But then they're like, hey, why are we all ganging up on each other? We all have white skin. Why don't we gang up against the Hispanics? Why don't we gang up against the black people? Why don't we create this hierarchy where race matters and the lighter your skin is, the more close to white and whiteness that you are, the better you'll be, the better outcomes that you'll have, you know, the better your life will be, because the system benefits those at the top, those who are white, rather than those who are on the bottom and rather than those who are black.
Exactly. And it's just something people need to talk about more.
Yeah, we'll get into it when we do that episode. But yeah, what is there anything that you definitely wanted to say about interracial relationships, your relationship specifically, how you've been navigating that?
So I wanted to talk about long distance, especially since, you know, coronavirus, quarantine, you might not be spending time with your boo, or maybe you're spending too much time with your boo. I don't know. But for my case, so as I said earlier, we were long distance, like within a week, because he had to study abroad in China. And I think if you're going through long distance, or you're about to, and you're nervous, like, here are some tips from your friendly neighborhood interracial long-distance couple.
Uh-huh.
So when I asked my boyfriend what is his advice, he said, and I quote, "If it's not easy, it's not right. I'm not even worried about not seeing you again because I know I will. If your partner is a good partner, they won't make you worry." So that's his view. And honestly, I was like, wow. But my advice is, honestly, I don't think everyone is wired for long distance. Because my friend, like, her primary love language is, like, physical touch. And that was very hard for her. You need a lot of communication, trust, honesty, loyalty, and perseverance. And you also need to put your partner before you, and vice versa. And I also think it's nice to have kind of like a model couple to look up to, so you can have like just reassurance that long distance works.
Don't believe in that.
I like encouragement. I like having like role model.
And especially from celebrity couples, don't believe in any of that.
Yeah, don't believe in celebrity couples because they break up all the time.
Yeah, well, it's not even that they break up all the time. These celebrities, even people in real life, they paint themselves in a way that's not true. They post all these lovey-dovey pictures, but that's not the reality of their relationship. Any relationship, y'all know, is not all giggles and pecans and rainbows or whatever. It's hard. Like, and it's not easy, breezy, beautiful all the time. There's y'all fight, y'all get mad at each other. So I think that it's dangerous for people to aspire to be these other celebrity power couples and, you know, they are not living in reality sometimes. You know, Russell and Sierra, everybody praises them. Don't you see it on social media? Oh, Russell, get you a Russell. Oh, Russell Wilson, I wish my man was like him. You don't know the ins and outs of their relationship. They might be going through it, but all they post is the lovey-dovey stuff to their social media. So for the outside world, they're like, wow, they are perfect for each other. They don't go through anything. They never fight. But that's not true, because in every relationship, you have disagreements. You have fights. Sometimes you don't like each other. That's the reality. Who is going to post a video of them fighting and saying, oh, I hate you. Oh, I don't agree with you. Who's going to do that? You only post the good parts on social media. So the fact that people look at their relationship and want to, you know, aspire to be in a relationship like that, I think it's wrong.
No, I totally agree with that. I think what I'm trying to say is, like, don't look at the couples who, like, post all the time and make you feel like they don't have any problems. I mean, like, mm-hmm. on a personal level, like, if you know any couples, like, say, a military couple or whatever, that had to make it work, and they're not flaunting it, and they're willing to be honest and transparent and supportive, mm-hmm. I think that's always nice to have, like, someone who understands you.
Yeah, I mean that's true. Just somebody that you relate with that has gone through it. And I think that's important in any aspect of life too, right? Whether that's in your career, somebody that's done it all before, that can show you the ropes, give you advice so you don't make the same mistakes that they made.
I love my man. I think he's awesome. Okay. And throughout it all, like, if you're listening, you know, Lucas, if you're listening to this, when this comes out, you know I love you very much and I appreciate everything you do.
Wow. So sweet. So y'all heard it. That's her perspective on interracial relationships from somebody that is in an interracial relationship. So it's not easy. There's obviously stuff that people have to work around. But yeah, that's her experience.
And
yeah.
Don't expect the trouble to necessarily come from the minority side.
Yeah, trouble comes on both sides.
Yeah, and like, maybe be sometimes prepared. It might not be great.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not for everybody. It's definitely hard. But, yeah, I appreciate you coming on here and explaining, you know, your experience, what you've gone through, the difficulty of it all, the different cultures and how you live that experience. Because I think a lot of people who are in interracial relationships can either relate to that or maybe not relate to it. But at least you came on and you were open and honest about it.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. So if y'all love the show, make sure you're subscribed, all that good stuff. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Feel free to follow me on my social media. Teresa, thank you so much for joining me. Y'all hang in there. Again, congrats to the class of 2020. So proud of you guys. I'm sorry that y'all are going through it right now, but, you know, we persevere. We persevere. So again, I will catch you guys on the next one. Y'all enjoy the rest of your week. Bye.
Bye.